My name is Kathy Plord, and I'm presenting today about You the Man, a longitudinal study that's examining a theater program called You the Man's role in bystander engagement and violence prevention. And I am the writer for this project, but the just a co-investigator, Nancy Shore, is a behavioral social scientist, and Peter Herrick has done a lot of work in bullying prevention, and we've got a couple of social work students who've been a part of this. We are all IRB licensed under this, and in this time I hope you get you a sense of this particular project and understand our longitudinal design and touch upon the changes that we see coming with this work. But let me just start. I'll interject with a little bit of information about the show in an interesting way. So, yo, Stan the Man here to steer you clear, to answer your questions and provide you with suggestions. You got a little lovely, you getting cuddly, you feeling studly, you come to me, my advice is free. Dear Abby's got the get up, Stan the Man tells you straight up, no set up. So we use theater and performance, and the actor, fortunately, is not me who does this. Stan the Man is the first of five characters in this performance. It's 30 minutes long. None of the five characters are perpetrators. I think that's very important to say, underline, and circle. We know what perpetrators look like. If we forget, we can turn on the television or go to a movie. What we don't have a lot of examples of in this culture is empathetic men and understanding how men are impacted by violence. The premise of this particular program is that we want to reach the mass in the middle. Most people are not perpetrators. Most perpetrators are male. Most men are not perpetrators. How do we activate the mass in the middle? We work with the premise that men and boys have to come to this conversation. And if we have any doubt of that, we'll just take a look at the numbers over the last couple of decades and realizing that their voice and their space in the movement is critical. We have a few beliefs in this work. Number one is do no harm. In every performance, in every situation, there are survivors in the room. That means something when you are putting something in front of a captive audience, if you will. Captive not as in incarcerated, that's a different conversation, and no, this play doesn't go into an incarcerated situation, but would everyone please go down to the assembly that's about to start in 10 minutes kind of captive situation. We also recognize and have the belief that detecting early and early intervention are our best friends and really the hope in the work. So the study design is something I'll go into for a second, but let me give you a little more information about the play itself. 30 minutes long. The point of that is that it doesn't last too long. It's an opportunity for community to engage with their local resources. The point is not the play. The play becomes the focal point for the community coming around this. When the play leaves, the hope is that people have met their local resources. They have met the people that you can call on a hotline call and have demystified that process. And the other opportunity here is that the community is naming what is normally kept silent and secret. And that in itself is pretty critical. I'll come back to little bits and pieces about the play itself, but let me tell you about this, the learning objectives, the audience itself. Let's see. The long-term impact and the short-term impact on youth audiences, we wanted to know, do they have an understanding of dating abuse and sexual coercion? And we wanted to see what their knowledge was regarding how to take action to stop the violence. And our objectives with this whole study is that we wanted to be able to have them identify what constitutes dating abuse. One of the big findings is that people don't generally think of emotional abuse and don't fully understand ramifications and how broad a sweep emotional abuse really is. They think of broken bones and, you know, black eyes and that sort of thing. And in the stereotype. Sexual coercion, I think coercion is an important word as opposed to assault, and I think coercion sort of helps broaden the conversation because it does include abuse in there, and that's also another important factor. We hope that the audience will also be able to identify these local resources, and critically, for support for themselves as bystanders, not just for someone who is struggling with the issue. And we hope that this will foster a school climate in which bystanders are compelled to take action, that it no longer is acceptable, that we are shifting a social norm. And our methods for this particular survey were not, you know, rocket science or late breaking, and I'm not the statistician and will not be using some of the terms that you were just using because I don't know what they mean. Fortunately, statisticians are on board and can give us that information. But we are working with three high schools, and they are in Maine. They're public schools, and the ninth grade cohort in each of these schools are who we're working with. Primarily, we take about, within 2 weeks of them seeing the show, we do a pre-survey. I can share the tool with anybody who would like to see that. Just give me your email and I'll be sure to send that off to you. And we are then following up with a Survey Monkey, same types of questions, but in a post. All of this is actually done electronically, which is just a godsend. It pays to buy the bigger package of Survey Monkey because you've just saved a lot of time. And we are doing a follow-up survey of those ninth graders when they are 10th graders, and we're about to do another follow-up with them, electronic survey with them as 11th graders. Some of the sample questions here, just a couple: how serious of a problem is it when someone puts down, insults, or calls the person they're dating or hooking up with names? How serious of a problem is it when someone in a relationship controls what you can and cannot do? Just a couple in there. We're also supplementing this quantifiable data with focus groups, so qualitative work. And that's where the graduate students have been most helpful in actually conducting the focus groups and being a part of the coding process. Again, not my forte, which is good to have people who are good at these things. And we are doing this a couple different times, once as 10th graders, not the whole school, just a group, and then we'll meet them again as 11th graders. We have funding in place right now for 3 years of this study. We are seeking a second batch of money, which would allow this to be the full five-year study that it is. And some of the example questions of the focus groups are things like, what are some of the ways that someone might get hurt? What kinds of support are out there? What are some ways you can support a friend? And after having done an initial IRB list of questions, we're actually in this new year supplementing that with some more specific questions that will ask them to be responding to the data that has come out, which is kind of exciting. This is just one of those pretty charts that shows you the structure of the study for year one. Our ninth grade class 2014, we'll do a pre and a post. We'll follow them up with year two, and there should be things filled in for year three over there in that top box, but it got dropped, sorry. And if we have year four and five, it'll just extend out and not fit on the page. Let me tell you a little more about another character. I tell you, the way people talk about sex all the time, you think half the world was getting it daily. Now me, I was a late bloomer. They call me the Virgin Larry. Verge for short. Yeah, pretty funny day in and day out. Hey Verge, great moves with the ball today. Too bad you didn't score in bed like you score in the court. Ha, nice. And if Gator Radar's turned on you, well, buckle up, buddy, because it's going to be a bumpy ride. Hey Verge, I ever hear you scoring for the other team? You can kiss your sorry ass goodbye. Nice. I got the first chick in bed that I could. It went well. Well, actually, things were a little premature. I mean that in several ways. I call that irony. You think it's been easy having the nickname the Virgin Larry? So another character from there. And we have different actors who do the show. We've got this guy here. He's clearly white, and for that photo, even whiter than he really is. Sorry about that. And his name's Brian, and we've got a guy who's been in New York and L.A., and now he's back home in New Orleans, but he hops on planes as well. His name is Lloyd Watts, and he's African-American. We've hired Latino actors before. It matters. I guess that's obvious. Sometimes the obvious is worth stating, though it does matter, and we are concerned with that. The script itself doesn't change, per se. There are a few maybe word choices or slang things that we do to keep it up and current, but it's not really a change of the words. It's a change of the body, the voice, the affect. So it fits. We are, as a side note, hoping that we find some funding to work with a group in Scotland. And the ball player who I just gave you the Virgin Larry will probably become not a basketball player, but a footballer. So very much looking to put this work out in the world in a different way, and having data will actually help us do that. As I keep saying, the point is not the play. Here's a sample of some of the stuff that comes out of the audience afterwards, showing you how seriously they take it. And it's interesting because it takes an actor a long time to get the language and the action into their body, and the students actually absorb it, and it is verbatim. And that's kind of the magic of theater, is that you can live it in real time. It just gives me goosebumps to hear a student afterwards actually use the language. Well, the character said this, what about, and they have exactly sponged it. And I think that points to that need, that this conversation is not happening, that we are not getting empathetic models, we're not getting realistic understanding of what it means to wrestle with this issue, to recognize it and to wrestle with it. The post-show itself, just to step back out of the research and give you a little bit on the intervention, if you will, is critical. And we don't provide programming afterwards. We support you in providing your own programming. There are some requirements, like having your local resources present. There is some sort of a post-show activity. And that is built to suit your community. In some places, it's been fabulous when they've had enough time and space to do a quick panel, hear your local resources. I work at this shelter and the play made me feel this. Oh, nice to meet you. I work at this violence prevention agency and the play made me feel that. Okay, in a few minutes, we're going to come back to these people, but break up into small groups or break up into gender specific groups. And generally in high schools, it's tricky to get anything divided more than male-female. Just the culture of schools doesn't generally allow for transgender to be its own group in that space. But the conversations that happen in single gender groups are very interesting and rich, and sometimes I feel more honest than they would be in mixed settings. That said, when you do that, they want to come back together as a whole and a whole community, and I think that's really important too. But given an opportunity to speak honestly and not necessarily showboat. And you've got to remember that in every audience there are survivors, and very often they're sitting next to their perpetrators. And so there's been a lot of consideration in the structure of the piece to not embody either the perpetrator or the victim. So we're stepping it out into five other stories, five other men having a different situation. I think it's important to say that this is not autobiographical. Autobiographical situations are important. I think people should tell their stories. There's a lot of healing and a lot of that, but there's also a lot of what I call emotional vampirism that happens in this culture, where we take people's stories and go, oh, wow, that was horrible. What happened to them? Ha! You know, there's this, you know, turn on the television, Big Brother, all the reality TV shows sort of feed this culture of sucking away, when what students really want is, what do I do? How do I help my friend? And I just resist feeding that kind of activity. In our survey so far, we have, this will change next week as we start round three. Pretests have been done by 641 students. We've broken that down into males and females. And of interest in this survey was how many of them have reported being victimized themselves. And I think it's important to underline this 13.2 male students. Well, you know that abuse happens at about a fairly even rate until about the age of 8, and this is a part of the culture and the fabric. And it was interesting, as we were developing the piece, there's a lot of resistance sometimes in the domestic violence movement to name it, because it's 90%, it's women. Okay. About those boys, can we not make them invisible? And also we need to, I think, connect the dots to cycles of abuse. And for those who have been abused, they don't all become abusive. And in fact, one of the characters in the play has that as his story. But it is something that is more likely to happen because of their own experience. I ripped this from presenting at a conference a few months ago and actually had readers give you sections of the play instead of me pulling it out of my memory. Moving into the focus groups for the qualitative, this is the rich stuff. It's always interesting to hear how kids are processing stuff. Asking them how they think seeing the man helped raise awareness of these issues within their school, they had answers like, they used to just think about the physical part, not the verbal. They had a nuanced understanding of how the verbal can be more hurtful. This permission to act, I think, is a huge part of the program, that it's okay to say something. And in fact, not saying something is saying something. You are choosing to stand with the abuser, and that's definitely one of the messages in the play. This recognition of how bad it can be, and sometimes you just need to sit to recognize a small word can be very hurtful, and a small word on the flip side can be very helpful for someone. Another question we asked was, based on what they learned from You the Man, what types of things would you do to support a friend who's getting hurt from someone they're dating or hooking up with? And some of their answers included things like listen to them. This was a message from one of the characters. Because even if they may not want you to, it's in their best interest that you get them help so it stops. We also advocate in the messaging of the play that people respect the person who's in the midst of it and not make an assumption as to what's going to help them. We model a safe intervention. The boy who's friends with the girl, and the boy is worried about the girl because of the relationship is increasingly abusive that she is in, doesn't disrupt her schedule. He meets her at the library, a public space, but where she's studying and her boyfriend won't be around. And so that was a choice on his part to do it in a way that wouldn't disrupt her schedule. And her request that he not make it worse sort of underlines for him that this is more than he can handle. And his next step in the play is to call a hotline. And so he will bring out the actor pulls up a flip chart that's got the T-bar for the stays, leaves, risk analysis that many of you might be familiar with, and really sharing with people that knowledge that the time someone is in most physical danger is when she doesn't, is when she leaves, or he leaves, as the case may be. And so looking for teaching points that are in a moment, but aren't yammer didactic, but actually someone discovering them and sharing with them and needing to be heard. Another focus group response to that last question is noticing boundaries, recognizing when it's time to get professional help. And this is just so sweet. I would personally try to be there for them. It's ultimately their decision as to what they do. You could end up losing that sense of support if you try to convince them not to be with that person, because it's ultimately their decision. They could get frustrated with you if you told them to leave them. So they understand, and they just need it named, and they need support in the process. This is interesting as well, how they have seen potential change at their school. People notice, they pay attention, they watch. It gave us more confidence to stand up. And there's this potential that nothing has happened since the play, that maybe they haven't seen anything. But anecdotally, we know, and this is why we're doing this over time, anecdotally, we know that it could be 4 weeks, it could be 4 months, it could be 4 years from seeing the play when people make the connection to the situation. The piece premiered in Portland, a very cold night, February 2002, and the other Portland, that's in Maine. And 4 years later, a young woman called me who had been in the audience and said, "Kathy, I was in your play. I sat down in my bed and I realized I had to leave." A college that this was presented at not too long ago, we heard from the site coordinator that a girl who had been in the orientation performance of this came back at the top of the next semester and said, "You know that play we saw last semester? I think that's my life right now." So we have these stories that are rich, and now we're getting some data to show that things are actually changing. So happy to be a part of that process. There are suggestions on what to do, posters, practice hotline calls, continue this performance. I was pleased they said that. I'm not in the room when any of this happens. I'm definitely removed from the process. I only interface with the administrators, so they have their paperwork and their opt-out permissions and things like that. It's been a journey and a real interesting process, and I am only saddened by how much this actually just needs to continue to go out in the world. We do a lot of work in concert with organizations. One example of a partnership that we do this in is Boys to Men. It's a really terrific organization in Maine that has an RSVP program, Responding to Sexism and Violence. It's an adaptation of MVP, a Mentors in Violence program that many of you may be familiar with, geared towards a high school level. And the students get trained in peer mediation and intervention and responding to sexism and violence. And then we bring in the play, and often they are the mediators or the facilitators for small groups. And then we've had to draw another concentric circle around this. They've hosted community performances for adults and parents and civic leaders. So it's never about us. It's always nice to hear from advocates who say, I've been trying to get into that school for years and years and years. This is the thing that helped me get in. It has strengthened their relationship with the community, and we don't go unless we can have support from both the administration and with local resources, because it's just not safe, which, to circle back to what I said earlier about prisons and that sort of captive audience, sure, you know, most people in incarcerated situation have sexual trauma and violence as a part of their history. It's statistically the norm, unfortunately. And to open that can of worms in a place like that where it's not equipped for vulnerability and safety and shift and healing, that sort of thing, it's just not the place for it. But we're very much looking forward to adapting some of our stuff for use in other people using the program in other settings, and I'd love to talk to you about that. So thank you.